Well, welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok, a Saratoga County Sheriff's deputy caught on video cursing and apparently slapping a man, was arraigned yesterday on harassment and official misconduct charges. Sergeant Sean Glanz resigned yesterday afternoon, just hours before a planned disciplinary hearing over the incident. Saratoga County Sheriff Michael Zerlo said Sergeant Glanz was charged Monday after an investigation into the encounter Friday in Half Moon. A video recorded by the man's friend shows Glanz cursing and insisting he has a right to search the vehicle, which had a rifle inside. A judge on Monday forbade Glanz from having contact with a man who hasn't been identified. Zerlo says a deputy who was with Glanz on Friday is under internal investigation. What do you think? Should Deputy Glanz have still had a job today? What's the bigger picture about police in general? Okay, was the reaction to this incident overblown? The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Want to hear from you. Let me just start with a little disclosure. I used to work for the New York City Police Department, or work with them anyway. I was assigned there by the John Jay College, and I was there a lot, met a lot of great cops, people who really understood the rules and who would never break the rules. On the other hand, at the time I was there, which was years ago, there was a lot of police corruption going on. And so the police are armed. They have a monopoly on, or a near monopoly on weaponry, official legal weaponry. So they're very powerful. Have you ever known a policeman who was outside the pall? I have. And it is never a pretty sight. And anybody who blows the whistle on them sure is going to hear about it. That's for sure. Takes a great deal of courage, I think. Okay, so we've got a Dan in Woodstock. Dan, you're on.
Alan, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, sir. I think there's a very easy solution to police corruption and police misconduct. Allow them, or demand, the public should demand that they wear body cams or shoulder cams.
Sure.
I think that totally eliminates this whole, you know, argument of who did what wrong. There's no hearsay here. There's video, just like this young man took. And the police are held accountable. And if they're not doing anything wrong, then what are they worried about?
Hey, Dan, all five phones are ringing, but I want to make one comment in reaction to what you're saying. It seems to me that there is certainly an argument to be made for what you said. But to understand somebody like the sergeant, and I'm just projecting myself now, I don't really know what he's thinking. But quite often these people convince themselves that they're protecting society by doing this, and that the legislators who have passed these rules or the courts don't know what they're talking about. So they're going to be the judge and jury right there. You know what I mean?
I hear you, Alan.
Yeah. Well, you're Dan, thanks for the wonderful call. Appreciate it. And I agree with you. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Right.
Bye.
Let's go to Bill in Albany. Bill in Albany, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, Alan.
Hey.
I'm calling in, and I don't know all the details.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think both the police officer and the young man were at fault. Now, obviously, the police officer overreacted with verbal abuse and physical abuse when he, I don't believe, was threatened. At the same time, I wonder why, or maybe your listeners know why, or perhaps you know why the officer suspected the young man in the first place.
Well, now, I think he saw the rifle. Am I wrong about that? I think he saw the rifle in the back seat of the car.
I
may be wrong about this, but he wanted to search the car.
Okay. Now, there have been a number. Now, I don't know if he needs a search warrant to search the car vehicle or not, but there's been, as you know, there's been a number of senseless killings.
Sure.
So I think the officer may have been within his rights, unless he needed a warrant, to at least search the vehicle.
Well, no, he was within his rights to ask, Bill. He was not in his rights to slap the kid around.
No, I know that. I just said both were at fault. At the same time, the young man, and I don't know if he has a right to have a weapon. And so if the officer suspected something, and in light of all the senseless killings that has happened, if it were me, I would have allowed the officer, and if I was legit and I had a license and I wasn't hiding anything, I would understand why the officer might be suspicious.
Okay, fair enough, but fair enough, Bill. But he had the right to call for backup. He, you know, what happens is he took the law in his own hands. I don't think there's much. Well, I mean, look, there's going to be obviously disciplinary hearings and trial here. The guy's been arraigned, but this is a sergeant on a police department. He knows the rules, right?
Yes.
I think that's what we're talking about here, because let me tell you something. I've seen cops who beat people up. They do it because they think it's okay. You know, we've had this major thing about stop and frisk in New York City, you know, walking while black, driving while black. In that case, cops are not, don't make the laws. They're supposed to enforce them.
I understand that. And, you know, I'm liberal progressive about those civil rights, too. But again, in light of the senseless killings, I know I'm repeating myself, you don't prefer that, but in senseless killings, and if the officer did have a right, if he did have a right to stop and ask without a warrant, I think the young man should comply.
No, but the young man knew his rights and didn't have to comply. That's your point. That's the point. If he said no and he got slapped and the law says you don't have to let anybody search your car without probable cause, and he said he had the right to say no, and then the belligerency started, that's a lot different. You know, I was once stopped years ago on the way up to visit a young woman in Binghamton. And I had a car full of guys in the car, and one of them was a cop hater. And the cop stopped me, and he had seen on the rear of my car, it said Hunter College, which is where I went to college. And he said, who owns this car? I said, I do. And he said, what do you mean, you do? You have Hunter College on the car. That's a girls' school, he said. The guy says, that's a girls' school. I said, not since 1956, sir, I said to him. With which this guy puts his head out the window and uses the F word on the cop, in which the cop snaps his finger and says, okay, you, to me, follow me back to the station. And I said, oh, officer, we all want to see our girlfriends and boyfriends, and this guy's really crazy. I'm so sorry. And he said, okay, you seem like a nice guy. Go ahead. He was making the law right there, depending on whether or not, you know, somebody had said something rude to him. So there you are. Hey, Bill, thanks.
Actually, Alan, when I was a little bit younger, I wish I had gone to an all-girl college. That was the whole point.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Bye. All right, let's go to Bob in Albany. Okay, Bob, you're on.
Hi. I think that the cop was didn't know what he was doing. It was unprofessional because he did have the ability to search without a warrant. You know, anybody with a Google machine could just type in these four words, police stop search warrant.
Right.
And you get a website saying, can the police legitimately search my vehicle without a warrant? And one of the ways they can do that is if the cop has probable cause to believe there is evidence of a crime in the car.
Yep.
So the cop should have just said, hey, I'm going to search your car. I know I don't need a warrant because a vehicle is a lot different than a home. It's a lot more dangerous situation for the cop involved. And so the cop should just told the motorist.
Well, what was the probable? Whoa! What was the probable cause?
The rifle. I mean, he.
No! It is not against the law to have a rifle.
I know that, but he was given a call to go to that place. He knew that there was a crime committed in the area, and these people fit some of the description and were acting suspicious according to the cop. Now that type of stuff generally holds up in court when the defendant tries to have that evidence suppressed. Suppose he found evidence of a crime in the car and they were the guilty parties.
Yeah.
The question is, would they have thrown out that evidence because they didn't get a search warrant? And the answer probably would have been no.
Okay, you make your point. Bob, you made your point. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Good points. Let's go to Mark in Salem, New York. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Yeah, Alan, the only police officer in New York State that has the right to search a car without a warrant is a conservation officer. A conservation officer can, because of the nature of people jacking deer and things, can stop a car and insist that they open it. They have more power than the state police, and they don't have to have a warrant to search a car.
Now, Mark, do you come to this with only because you sound so authoritative, with a certain amount of expertise in this area?
Well, my uncle was the chief game warden for the five counties of Warren, Washington, Essex, and I can't think of the other two, Saratoga.
Okay.
And I know that from speaking with him. Now, my experience over the years with the state police has been very I've had two incidents in my life where I was frightened to death. One was many years ago when a woman on the Northway, exit 31, a woman had run out of gas. They were dressed for going for a wedding. They're obviously in their wedding clothes. I offered to get gas at the station. She was on the phone when they used to have the phones on the Northway, and asked if I could use the turnaround just below her after I got the gas. And the man said, yes, if you're careful. Well, a policeman, state trooper, followed me down, pulled me over, and read me the riot act using all sorts of foul language. And when I told him I had permission, he, you know, went on his thing, and the guy said,
okay,
yes.
Mark.
Well, anyway, what he did is he threw my license back on the ground and then went back on the southbound lane. He went north on the southbound lane. Foul language is not necessary. I've had it happen again. The man was not angry with us. He was just speaking, you know, to us, and he started using every four-letter word. And this is a state trooper.
Yeah, so now my experience has been exactly the opposite, which is courtesy. You know, calling
these were older men,
calling me sir. Older guys, younger guys. So I don't know. I mean, I think everybody has different experiences. But the one thing I know is that one guy can spoil it for everybody.
Right.
And 90%, 95%, almost 100% can be great and rule followers, and it takes one jerk to do it.
These were all older men that did this. The younger officers and the women officers are always very polite.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, we got to go. We got to hit a break here.
Okay,
thanks a lot.
You.
Bye. Everybody stay there. Wherever you are, we have three free phones, 1-800-348-2551, where we will be back in about 7 seconds. Go.
Support comes from Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, a local independent vacuum dealer of Miele, Sebo, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, and more. Sales, service, repairs, lexivac.com. Bistro 63 at the Monkey Bar, downtown Amherst, offering casual lunches and dinners featuring steak, seafood, cocktails, and wine using local organic products. Banquet facilities and patio dining, bistro63.com. United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, working to create opportunities in education, financial stability, and health in the community. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer. UnitedWayGCR.org. And Norman Rockwell Museum, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, presenting the opening of Mort Kuntzla, The Art of Adventure, Saturday, November 15th, NRM.org.
And we're back. Thank you. All the phones. No, there's one free phone are ringing. We got one this morning I wanted to read. Law enforcement officers are supposed to be professional and help citizens feel safe. How can anyone see this video and not feel anything but remorse for him and the way he acted? He has a gun, a taser, a baton, another officer with him. Can call for backup. How is this kid a threat? No reason to slap this guy. Cuffs, anything but slapping him. He's a tough guy cop who wanted to be big and tough. Anyway, that was one. Let's go to Ed in Woodstock. All right, Ed, you're on.
West Stockbridge.
Oh, I'm so sorry. My eyes are not that good. Thanks, Ed.
You can hear me all right?
Well, now you're getting a little low. Stay close to the phone. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. You know, this officer represents to me just the sort of continuing erosion of respect for the Fourth Amendment and the public it's supposed to protect. And it's part of several larger stories, the so-called war on drugs, the militarization of the police forces across the country, and the decline of citizens willing to stand up and say, hey, enough is enough. Because if we don't, it's just going to roll on. It has a mind of its own, this phenomenon.
Have you ever done it personally?
Ever done what?
Stood up to a police department.
Goodness, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, and it's a scary phenomenon.
I know. But there was a long time, Ed, I don't know if you remember this or if you've been around long enough, but I decided, probably stupidly, to blow the whistle on some of the bad actors in the Great Barrington Police Force at the time.
I remember.
Yeah, and it was not a pretty sight. All of a sudden, the phones began to ring. Ring, ring, ring. Nobody was ever on the other end. Cop cars... Cop cars were coming around the block every 2 or 3 seconds. It was unbelievable. When I would confront them, they'd say, oh, that's only to protect you. So so I know what it's like, and it is tough to stand up to a police department. You have family, you have other people you worry about.
Well, we have to work together to retrain our public employees to remember that they're employees of the public.
Well, let me just say, the present Great Barrington Police Department has really been looked at very carefully, and everybody's very respectful and very nice. But you got to remember at any moment that this kind of power can go to some people's heads.
Well, I understand. And the Supreme Court is opening up the door every day.
Yeah, that's true.
Let them do what they want to do.
Ed, we got five phones ringing. Thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, bye-bye. Okay, let's go to Jim in Elizaville. Jim, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The things I have to say are really just opinion. You know, I'm not trying to solve any problems or, you know, recreate.
Well, that's what this show is all about.
Right. First of all, it seems obvious to everybody that this guy should have just acted in an appropriate manner. I mean, that's simple to say. So, I believe he was out of line, and he should be judged on the fact that he was out of line. But I disagree with you about something.
Okay.
And that has to do with the gun in the car. Now, I agree with you that everybody, well, I don't know if I agree with you. I don't know if you agree with the fact that everybody should be able to own a gun, but
I do not.
I do not, as
anybody who listens to me knows. Okay, but go ahead.
But
the law is the law, Jim. That's the point.
Yes, the law is the law. And I guess what I'm doing now is I'm going to try and give you my wish list about carrying guns.
Well, do it in a sentence. Go ahead.
Okay. Treat guns the way you treat cars. In other words, anybody can buy whatever car they want to buy.
But you got to get a license.
Exactly. Treat guns the way you treat cars. Go through the same process that all Americans go through everywhere when they want to buy a car and when they want to use the car. I think the issues that come up with guns and protecting the public, I should say with cars, if you want to take your car out on the road, you have to meet a series of requirements.
What if you're mentally ill? Can you drive a car?
No, wait a second. If you're physically ill or mentally ill. I don't know about the specifics, but I would believe no. In other words,
depends on how mentally ill, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Jim, exactly. Jim, your points are all well taken, but everybody's on a phone and everybody wants a chance. You made a good point about licensure. That's on your wish list. But
there you go.
And I think that the one thing that this governor in New York State has done really well is the New York State Safe Act. But thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. Yeah.
Let's go to Paul in Albany. Paul in Albany, you're on.
Hey, Alan. How you doing?
So far, so good. Don't ruin
hey,
it.
So, I won't. So I've been listening to the discussion on Vox Pop, and one of the things that you mentioned earlier is the concept of somebody overreacting. And I think I'd like to introduce a narrative into this discussion about not excusing the behavior, but explaining the behavior.
Okay.
And what we see is police getting traumatized by their work and therefore overreacting in these situations. And it's usually characterized with anger or becoming unprofessional.
Sure.
I had done a presentation with a group of state troopers, and one discussed the reaction where somebody jumped their hostage negotiators. Somebody jumped from a bridge one week. The following week, there was a woman about to jump on the bridge, and he reacted and just yelled at her, "What about your kids?" And he was introducing that. He said, you know, it became unprofessional. And I said to him, but there was also authenticity in your voice. And the woman got off the bridge. And then we talked about how the prior week's interaction made him become unprofessional. And I know
why was he so unprofessional? What was unprofessional about saying, "What about your kids?"
Well, because he yelled and screamed.
Well, but it worked.
Well, it worked by chance.
Well, that's different than if he grabbed her or if he slapped her or if he, you know, did something terrible to her. I mean,
sure. Sure, but I think what is characterized with PTSD is overreacting with anger.
Sure, sure. No, I get it. This is a very, very hard job. I mean, it's an almost impossible job. Do you want to know? You're a first responder. You got to know your mental health. You got to know what the procedures are. You got to know all of that kind of stuff. It's easy enough for everybody to lecture them, but it's right, Paul. But it's but these guys are on the front line.
Right. Exactly. And I think what we're talking about today is the symptom. And the problem is the absorbing of the trauma.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to take into consideration and help people understand that. You know, we're teaching veterans and returning what to look for PTSD and how to understand it, and teaching families to be a better container around that and bring this up to the veteran.
Mm.
We're not having that same conversation with the people that service in traumatized situations, firefighters.
Okay, fair enough. Stuff. Hey, Paul, thank you for all your service and all you're doing to help the situation here. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it very much. Yeah.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
1-800-348-2551. Three free phones now. Get online, get a ticket, and you'll be on in no time at all. Let's go to Jan in Middletown. Jan in Middletown, you're on.
Hello, Alan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask you an impossible, really, question. I'm assuming that you are white, and my question is, do you think that you would have had as positive a response from the police officer who asked you to follow him to the station after one of your passengers used foul language?
Right, right.
Do you think that you would have had that same experience if you were a person of color?
Well, I don't know, to be honest with you, but I did mention, you may remember earlier, maybe you weren't listening, the whole controversy over stop and frisk. And at the bottom of that, and I use the very words, you know, driving while black, walking while black. So there's no question that there has been, you know, a good deal of racism connected with policing. I mean, that's just the way it is. And that's why you want to integrate a police force. And that's why you want to bring people of diverse, you know, diverse perspectives onto a police force. But I think you make a good point.
Thank you, Alan. And I'd like to, while I was waiting, I heard one more thing, to just take a second and say to the person who is making some assumptions about the rifle, I come originally from a rural background where hunting was so much a part of the culture that the schools were closed on the first day of deer season.
Yeah.
So this idea of whether it's okay to carry a rifle or not is really cultural or subcultural within our culture.
Yep.
And also, I believe there are different standards for whether you are a white person, and there are different standards for race and gender.
Yes, and I would point out that some of the shooters, or most of them, in these horrible incidents have been white.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, Jan,
I
thank you for making this very important point. Thanks again. Yep. Let's go to Pat in LaGrangeville. Okay, Pat, you're on.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I could go on forever on this subject. First things first, I think that each police car, the driver's compartment should be cut in two, and there should be a public advocate on the other side who witnesses and records everything.
Well, that ain't going to happen.
I know it ain't. Okay. It ain't going to happen, but that's the only way that would really knock out.
Well, what about cameras? What about cameras in every car?
You know, that would be great, too. But, you know, you see some of these things. These cops know when to walk off camera where these cameras don't reach and stuff. I've had my own experiences, but this guy also had big trouble in the past. You know, he's liable for blinding a man, taking away a man's
sight. I think that was an accident, to be fair.
He was driving 60 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone. It's not an accident.
It is an accident, Pat. Cops often have to go fast. I mean,
he didn't have to go fast. He was driving. He wasn't on the way to any call or anything. Check it out.
Well, let's put it this way.
And then he didn't want to take responsibility for that. This guy is obviously a loose cannon, and it's good that he resigned. We don't need policemen like this around. I have sister and brother-in-law who are lawyers and public defenders, and it's insane. These guys, they are cowboys. I think, Pat,
to be fair, I think you're painting with a wide brush. Look, I know a lot of cops who are great people, who are very respectful of the law, who would never pull this kind of stuff. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful not to stereotype here.
They have a lot of free reign. They get to talk on their cell phones all the time because it's in the line of duty. I think there should be public records for all of their cell phone calls. There should be everything that happens in that car should be recorded. And then it can go to a hearing board or whoever so that we know everything that goes on,
Pat,
and that it's fair is fair.
Pat, good points. I thank you for calling. We want to let everybody have a chance. Thanks again.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to Josie in Belfast. Well, Josie, are you there? No, apparently not. Okay. I don't know what that was all about. Let's go to John in Schuylerville. John in Schuylerville, you're on.
How you doing, Al?
I'm good. I think I just got a little scared by that last call. I don't know what was happening. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll try to be as non-threatening as possible.
Right.
I just wanted to make a quick comment, not necessarily in the vein of your previous caller, but just about what type of person typically becomes a police officer.
There have been a lot of studies on that.
Yeah, and just sort of the low end requirements that are necessary to become one from an intellectual standpoint, and it's harder to find a reasonable and logically thinking police officer. I think, and a lot of the reason for that is because almost anyone with a clean record can become a police officer. So you don't necessarily get the complex thinkers and the reasonable actors, because it's mostly, in my experience and the people I know who have become police officers, it's mostly, big, tough guys who do like the idea of authority and like the idea of a steady paycheck and a secure job.
Well, John, would you, have you ever thought about being a cop?
No, never once.
How come?
Well, for one, I think the uniform's disgusting and I couldn't have the short haircut. But outside of that, I wouldn't want to be in a position where I'm upholding laws that, one, I don't necessarily agree with all of them, and two, I also wouldn't want to be perceived as someone who at any time.
But don't we have to thank the people who have taken on this onerous job? I mean, let me tell you. I've had trouble at the house. Guy came up and ran over our gardens and left what I considered to be a threatening thing on our door and all the rest of it. And the cops came and they got the guy. They were very polite and they did it.
Without a doubt. I think we definitely need great police officers and responsible ones and reasonable ones. I just think that the requirements to becoming a police officer allows more loose cannons into the force. And then you have situations like this where, as your last caller was saying about his relatives who are public defenders and lawyers, now they don't become police officers.
Uh-huh.
So, you don't get that sort of mindset in the force. You get more of this loose cannon one, and then you have situations like you saw.
Okay.
There you are.
And I thank you. There are five phones ringing, and we want to give everybody a chance. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Let's go to Ray in Great Barrington. Ray in Great Barrington, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, Alan?
I'm good, my friend.
Well, I've got about four things here.
Why don't you try one of them?
I think what I'm going to do is give you the short on each one and let you follow up.
Well, Ray, then hurry up, okay? Because there are all these other people.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the police, simply the truth. I'm 67. Many of the bullies all through school became police and still are bullies on the police force. That's gone. A gun in view on the seat of a car is not a concealed weapon. They had no reason to hide it. I grew up in the old days, in the old Berkshires, where we still had the hunting as part of the culture.
Okay.
I was a farm boy. I lived in Maine for most of my adult life, and this wouldn't ever even happen up there. It just wouldn't. Any concern about the gun by anyone.
But isn't there always, somebody called in earlier and said, you know, there's always this thing, which is there's been some reported crime. There's always a sort of an out for rough police behavior, a rationale. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Did that occur in this case was what I wondered.
Yeah, well, who knows? Who knows? One would never know. Ray, we want to get to everybody. Go ahead. What else you got?
Let me give you my last one.
Okay, sure.
I don't know about New York State, but in Massachusetts and in Maine, young ones who want to hunt at 12 years old, it may be 10 in Maine, I think it is, must take a certified gun safety course. And I think that at, I don't know whether they can hunt by themselves.
Okay, no, but your point is well taken. This is a game.
But I think all people getting a hunting license
should have this.
Should take a gun safety course, adults included.
Now, Ray, I don't want to give you the rush because you know how much respect I have for you, and it's a lot. But I do have to take a break. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay.
Yep.
We have a lot of people on the line, Chris and Lee and Josie and Cynthia. We'll be right back in about 7 seconds.
Support comes from 10,000 Villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, featuring fairly traded home decor and gifts handcrafted by artisans around the world. 10,000villages.com for additional store locations. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting the Round the Lake Challenge, providing 30 missions to explore Lake George. LGLC.org. And Passing the Torch Through the Arts, presenting a reading of Nina's Fire, a musical about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire of 1911, Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 5 at the Holy Spirit Lutheran Church in Albany. PassingTheTorchThroughTheArts.com.
And we're back. A little more than 7 seconds, but not much. Let's go to Chris in Monroe. Okay, Chris in Monroe, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Chris.
Yeah, this is Fritz from Monroe.
Oh, Fritz, okay.
Fritz, F-R-I-T-Z, yes, sir.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Fritz.
I would like to say that being a law enforcement officer is a lot of power for one human being to have over another human being.
You bet.
It's too much power for an undereducated individual. Too much power for a dishonest individual. And one more thing. A good cop who protects a bad cop is a bad cop. And that's it.
I agree with every word you just said. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Let's go to Lee in Ulster. Welcome back, Lee. You're on.
Hey, Alan. I want to say I've been listening, and I want to say that the difference between now and the time when every bad guy in the high school, you know, wound up on the local police force is probably long gone. But I also say I think that the job of policing is so difficult and so important. When you need a cop and you get a good one, it is unbelievable what a comfort it is.
Yep.
These jobs should be elevated, I think, above the level of other types of civil service jobs. Better money, better support, better education. It is what they do is so important and so stressful. It's not the same thing as being on a road crew. It's just not.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we give the job enough respect.
But you know, but let's assume you're right, Lee, and you often are, if not always. But what are you arguing against here? I mean, the fact of the matter is, a guy just called and he said there are several things. If a cop protects a bad cop, thin blue line. We saw the commission back in the 70s in New York, which was turning over a rock, and every time they did, they were finding the Knapp Commission. They were finding, you know, something that was going wrong. It's a lot of power. It's a lot of power.
Yes, it is, and you can't throw them all out on the sidewalk and start over again. I mean,
No, you cannot. So when you get a new sheriff who comes into town and says, this video goes viral. It goes viral for a reason because it's outrageous. And you get a new sheriff, and it's an opportunity for him to say, okay, we got some new rules now. You've got to behave, and believe me, people are going to behave.
And I think that that if the criteria was tightened, the people who would be getting the job in the future would be more likely to understand what those rules are for than guys who simply feel restricted by them and act out when their frustration level reaches a certain level. I don't know any other way to speak to this other than the fact that I just don't think the policeman should not be elevated above other types of civil service.
Okay,
we need them so much more when we need them.
Fair enough, Lee. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to, I guess it's Josie in Belchertown. Josie, you're on.
Yes, hi, this is Jose.
Jose, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's Josie and the Pussycats. I love that.
Yeah.
So, first of all, you know, I'd like to say I'm a former cop. My wife's a cop for almost 30 years. You know, there is no excuse of the dangerousness of the job. There's not excuse, you know, for police abuse. I like to say that the complaint process of filing a police complaint for police abuse, it's structured to fail. It's basically peers investigating themselves. The police misconduct thus has no checks and balances where victims, you know, they have no recourse. The mistrust thrives in this process. You know, right now all complaints are first reviewed by the officer in charge in an attempt to avoid the complaints being put in writing. And when they're put in writing, they, you know, again, they got the peers investigating the friends. My solution to all this problem because of the police abuse includes psychological profiles when they're in the hiring process.
Mm-hmm.
To exclude power-seeking people. Give the mayors and the city leaders power to fire police who has abused without concern of the so strong police unions across the country, which keep this complaint process. And listen, Al, there is no police department in the country that has random drug testing. The police unions fight that. It's not even allowed. And another solution to increase community policing by taking away, reducing the number of cars, forcing the cops to meet the people and avoid this branding that they have in us against them, which creates mistrust. And finally, cameras will help, but the legislation to take away the complaints process and put it into the court system, because until then, mistrust will always thrive because the complaint process is structured to fail. Thank you.
Well, you sound like a man who knows what he's talking about. Thank you so much, Jose. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I can tell you, Al, if you allow me one moment, just yesterday we had a meeting, a horse event that was going on.
Yep.
We had a big, large motorcade, 300 motorcycles through the groups of horses. We almost, all the horses jumped and reared. It was very dangerous. It's against the law. But guess what? The two police departments found that it was a miscommunication of our event that we changed the date. After the meeting, and of course I know the laws, they changed their mind and found out that the problem was not us changing the dates. It was the manner and the way this motorcade drove, which is the motorcycles, 300 of them, stuck real close to each other and more than five abreast. So even if a child ran in front of them, suddenly they would not be able to stop. But it took a while to get them to admit that because of the way the complaint process is.
Jose, we got it. We got it. Believe me, we got it. We thank you for the very interesting and important call. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Cynthia in Hudson, but not before I give the phone number, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And I want to remind everybody that we're coming to the end of the show. We have enough time to get you in. There are only two people on the line now. That leaves three free phones. Love to hear from you. Cynthia, you're on.
I just think that the whole topic is a very slippery slope.
Yep.
Because there are so many court officers, sheriffs, police people, judges, who've been shot and some killed in this country because there are people hear what they wish to hear. And there are too many people like Clive and Bundy who wish to hear many stories about police misbehavior, of which there is much. I just think taking up this topic with an open mic situation is, in my mind, somewhat inappropriate.
Why in the world would it be inappropriate if it's a matter of great social and political policy? And as you say, quite correctly, it is a slippery slope. But, you know, democracy is not an easy thing to figure out. But why wouldn't we be talking about this? I take some exception to you on this, Cynthia.
I know you always do.
Yes, I do. It's my right too, you know. Yours too, to say anything you want. But it's my right to say, why wouldn't we talk about this?
Yes, I think it's okay to talk about it, but I don't think that that kind of particular forum is necessarily a good one. You have a lot of smart viewers, but you don't know who your listeners are necessarily.
Well, no, that's true. That's absolutely true. And that's the role.
In my way of thinking, and that's my opinion, a better situation is one where you invite a number of people to come with different views.
Well, we do that too.
We
do that too.
Well, that's what I suggest is a better forum.
Well, it's not better, best.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, Cynthia.
It's better in my mind.
Cynthia, thank you for the wonderful call. Appreciate it. Yeah. Okay, let's go to David in Saratoga Springs. David, you're on.
Dr. Shartok, how are you this afternoon?
All right.
Well, you know, I always enjoy hearing you take umbrage at a call. It's always entertaining. I too find that, you know, of course it should be open for free discourse. Maybe the uneducated, like myself, I didn't finish seventh grade. I'm self-educated.
Some of the brightest people I know in this world are self-educated.
Yes, I've read David Byrne wrote a book recently, and he said something to the effect of, so the brightest people, they're like, you know, they really shine once they recover from their education, their schooling, rather. Which is sort of my point. I think that there's a real heavy indoctrination in the schools, public schooling, compulsory schooling, that, for example, I remember...
No, I want to get to the point here, David. There's a lot of...
It's very difficult.
Let me help you.
The source is, it starts with the parents and the schools indoctrinating that if you're not doing it, this whole idea, if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you have to worry about? Well, that's because we're not really taught our constitutional rights and the things that we need to stand up for, you know? So Americans just accept it as, well, to make the world safer, get those terrorists, you know, that's just, I think that's part of the problem.
No, I think you make a very good point. You think
it's incumbent upon the parents to educate the children.
Okay, I think you make a very good point, David. I wish I could stay on longer with you, but the point is very well taken that we need to do more to educate people as to the Constitution and their constitutional rights and the whole fear factor, which is any kind of thing that is done in the name of authority is good because think of all the bad things that happen in the world.
That's
really where you go bad. David, again, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Right. Let us go to our friend Jules in Hillsdale. Jules, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Alan. How are you doing?
Sure.
I don't think there's any disagreement that the officer was out of control in this situation. An out-of-control officer is a danger to the public, to himself, and to his fellow officers. But, you know, we've mentioned PTSD. We know that policing is a very difficult job. It's dangerous. It can cause a lot of stress. I've heard callers talk about profiling, you know, mental profiling when they as a prerequisite to joining a force and so on. But what I haven't heard about is continuing support during the time that the officer is a member of the force. I would think that really, if we're going to follow through in this, we need to have annual or possibly semi-annual checks, evaluation. How's your mental state? What's happening? You know, stress conditions.
Sure.
Give treatment or give counseling and maybe even some paid leave if necessary to bring him back to some sort of reasonable state. But we don't have that.
Well, no, wait a second. You say we don't have it. A lot of communities do, major police forces do have it.
Okay. Well, that's what I wasn't aware of.
Of course. So there are some that do and some that don't. And then sometimes it doesn't mean a thing.
Right. Well, the other thing is that you've got to pay for it. Obviously, it's going to cost money, and with the budget cuts and cutting back on money for forces, for emergency responders, and so on, it becomes difficult to do. But it's an absolutely necessary part of this.
I agree with you, Jules. I don't want you to give you the rush, but
I'm just going
to get everybody in here.
Great, thanks.
Okay, let's go to James in Hudson. James in Hudson, you're on.
Yeah, I'm going to be really quick.
Okay.
First of all, I'm going to say that I have relatives and even a few friends on various police forces,
right?
And they're not all idiots. There are actually a lot of caring, sensitive people.
Yes, and I agree with that.
I also, when I lived in New York City, I had, I was intimidated several times, and also had like homophobic slurs like hurled at me.
Yep.
And so it's a it's nothing. It's not a black and white situation.
It's a mixed bag.
I'm going to let you get to the next person.
No, but I think you make a very important point, and it is why when somebody does something stupid on a police department, they endanger everybody else who works with them. Yeah. Hey, James, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
All right, we've got Ed in Germantown. Ed, you're on.
Hi, Alan. First-time caller.
Good. Great.
I just happened to have watched the video, and from what I can glean from it,
yep.
seems as though this particular case, it looked as though the car was unoccupied and locked with the gun in the back.
Right. I think that's true.
And then, right. And then the two young gentlemen came and were confronted by, I believe, two police officers. And it looked like from that point when they declined to allow the police to
right.
Search the vehicle because, of, you know, this young man had a right to decline, things started getting, things went downhill from there. And it looked as though the sergeant wanted to win the confrontation, especially in front of another police officer.
Okay, go ahead. You got to finish up here, Ed. What your point
okay.
is?
My point is that the young man had a right to refuse.
Right.
And then the police officer slapped the kid.
Yep.
And said something to the effect of, you know, are you resisting? And then, at that point, he believed he had a right to.
And can you imagine if the kid had resisted, had done anything but put his hands up in the air, then it would have been all over, right? And we've had several people write us about that.
Yeah, well, that was what was concerning me. It seemed like a police tactic.
You're resisting. And anything is resisting. Okay, Ed, thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
You bet, Alan.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go to Gideon in Albany. Gideon, you go.
Well, just to follow up on your last caller.
Sure.
You know, it does appear like it's a tactic. And, you know, the New York Times had an article this past week about civil asset forfeiture. And, you know, cops, police departments across the country are increasingly relying on civil asset forfeiture. And they have to find some reason to basically get into the car. And in the article, what they discussed was that police, you know, some of the seminars that police attend actually talk about targeting specific vehicles or assets that they know their departments might need. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I agree with what Jose had to say earlier, that, you know, cameras, psychological profiling of your officers, and really, you know, there should be a zero tolerance.
Okay, and I just want to mention that we just heard from Bonnie, who said there are, capital letters R, police departments with random drug testing under drug-free workplace policies. And there you go. Gideon, you make good points. Thanks for calling.
Thanks
Appreciate
a lot.
It. Yeah.
Good. Bye.
Okay, very quickly then, Dave in Saratoga. Dave, it's got to be fast, but go ahead and do it.
Real quick, as a former police officer put in my time, I want to make a few comments.
Sure.
Mainly about something that police officers don't focus on enough, and that is that the most important weapon that they have is their brain.
Okay, go ahead.
And once they focus on that, just about that will help any situation to come out better than if they weren't using it.
Okay, but
simple comment.
Well, give us an example, and let's take this case. Is there something you'd like to say about what the profundity of your remark, which is, of course, true. How would somebody's brain have helped in this case, knowing what not to do?
Well, remember, if your brain is the thing you're focusing on, it's not your emotions.
Right.
And well, it would seem to me that someone got out of control. And we all know, whether it's our governments, whether it's the police, whoever it is, checks and balances. If you think somebody's watching, boy, you sure pay attention a little bit better, and you're much better behaved. And I believe that it's important. Some of what Jose said, I agreed with about the checks and balances. I still think that police officers have to have rights, just like anybody else. So I don't think they shouldn't have representation unless that representation is obstructed. Then it's a problem.
No, but who said they shouldn't have a representation?
Oh, I thought Jose mentioned something about. He felt that the unions and the representation oftentimes was obstructive, and while I'm sure that has been the case at times, it's certainly not the case all the time.
Everybody deserves representation. I don't think that's where he was. I thought he made some very salient and good points. Dave.
I did too.
Thank you so much for this great call.
Appreciate you. Have a good day. Thanks.
Bye. Okay, we're just about out of time. Thanks, everybody who called in. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Stories Nursery. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of plants, trees, and gifts for the holidays. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, and Sundays, 9 to 4, a gardener's destination. StoriesNursery.com and Current Compliance Services, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance. Tomorrow through Friday in Saratoga Springs, featuring keynote speaker Cynthia Cooper, whistleblower at WorldCom. At WorldCom, currentcompliance.com. Again, currentcompliance.com. Stone Soup Concrete Incorporated. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Your calls were answered by our wonderful friend, Bruce Herbach. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. And today, to Ray Graff, who really is a whiz. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks now, again, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.